You're listening to the Houston Hour on 90.1 FM KPFT, a Pacifica radio station.
Back from break. Well, Heidi, I am thrilled and excited because we have somebody very special. She often is not someone who is interviewed, so we're excited to be able to have what I guess would be kind of a little mini exclusive here on the Houston Hour, especially.
Ooh, ooh.
I know. Yeah, how about that? Well, it is LGBTQ plus History Month. People don't think about this. When we think of October, we think of other milestone events, like we obviously think about Italian Heritage Month, which it is, or the German Heritage Month, which we've got some guests coming on to talk about that too later on in the month. But October often isn't discussed as National LGBTQ plus History Month. And we have with us somebody very special because she's actually somebody who has worked hard to really document the history of Houston in a unique way. All these times that we can put history out there in different special spaces and ways, this is a perfect example of that. I'm talking about the one and only Sarah Fernandez. Welcome to the Houston Hour.
Thank you for having me.
We are excited because you've done something really special. Tell listeners what you kind of created 10 years ago.
Well, 10 years ago, Creating Change was coming into town, and it seemed like the perfect opportunity to have some sort of history display. And so I asked the committee if we could do that, and they said yes. So we put together 27 banners that covered 11 decades of Houston LGBTQ history.
And these aren't just like little banners. Tell listeners how big these banners are.
These banners are like 30 inches wide, 65 inches long.
Yeah.
They're pretty significant. So you're going to get a lot of great visuals and you get it from a distance. And now tell listeners, too, some place these banners have been displayed at.
Okay. So once the conference was over, people liked the banners and we were invited to the HRC Gala. Every year they exhibit them at the Anderson Library at University of Houston. They've been at the Unity Banquet. They've been at the MCCR Church. They have been lots of places.
And you mentioned earlier MD Anderson Library. Tell listeners why that's significant on the U of H campus, that particular library collection.
Oh, they have a special collection. U of H has a special collection that's LGBTQ, and they are archiving all the publications, photos. It's a wonderful collection.
So I'm a credentialed fine art appraiser in addition to having an art gallery here in town. And one of the things I do is I value things for charitable donations, and I've worked with clients who've made donations to those archives. And I think it's really important to have those archives, and how wonderful that the banners are displayed. It's so validating for the community and just a wonderful thing to do. So how wonderful that you are making that happen.
Equally important for the public to know these collections do exist, as Heidi mentioned a second ago. Like, it's important to know that if you do have old photos or manuscripts or archives or things that you might not think are important, even something from a button from a rally from the 70s or 80s, or a t-shirt from an old bar in the Montrose area or the LGBTQ community that serviced that area, it's just to have these artifacts, these archives, these records and things to paint a picture. We like Houstonians to know that every library has their kind of niche, and when it comes to LGBTQ plus history, I think the MD Anderson Library at U of H campus is probably the go-to place, especially as for a mutual friend of ours who is very generous with his collection, because one day, as he said very famously, his collection will all go to the library at U of H. Tell listeners who's a buddy of yours and you serve on his board.
Yes, that's J.D. Doyle, and he's got J.D. Doyle Archives. He's got four websites, which are wonderful. When we were doing the banners, he was one of the first people that I leaned on, although he was very busy at the time, so he said he really couldn't, but he came across with a lot of images.
Oh, he's a friend of the show. He yes. came on during Pride Month this year, and I know he's got a new book out, and I understand it's doing really well, so that's great.
Yes, and he set up the website for us.
Oh.
So we wouldn't be there otherwise.
And tell people the website real quick.
Oh, the website's called HoustonWeHaveHistory.org.
That is so great. What a great way for your organization to capture that particular tagline, because everybody knows the iconic Houston, we have a problem in connection to NASA, but for the LGBTQ plus community, because so many communities, minority communities specifically, don't feel like their voice is out there enough. And I just love the idea of the LGBT community capturing that Houston, we have history, because it's such a great tagline. And the website is so easy to remember. number now. So now, Houstonians, you've heard this before. You can go there on your own and get lost in some of the project itself. When it comes to JD, how did y'all first meet?
We met at a Pride History Tent, which Arch would have it every year. And I had a display on PFLAG. And on the top of that display was a photo of Vannella Harrison at the March on Washington in 78.
Can you tell our listeners what PFLAG is?
Yes. PFLAG is an organization for family members of LGBTQ people. When I joined, it was LGBT. Actually, it was just LGB.
Uh-huh.
And the parents were there to support their children. They were also there to work through their own feelings. And they were there to advocate. So those were the three missions. And the parents there taught me a lot. They didn't like the way the media covered LGBT. And they made it known. They went to the paper. They would do protests at
And when
events.
Was this?
That was in 1998 through 2000. Mm-hmm. But it continues. And parents have changed. And now the focus is more on trans children because this is where there's more pushback and it's harder. So they're fighting.
Well, I remember when all these votes were coming up and I remember thinking, like, is trans like really affecting that many people? Is that such a big deal? And then it turns out it does affect a lot of people. It is a big deal. I have a transgender niece, in fact. You know, we weren't talking about that before. And when I was growing up in the 70s, I don't think it was something we were really talking about. And in the 80s, when AIDS came along, then suddenly people realized how many people they loved were in that community. Mm-hmm. And I think as awful as that whole AIDS time was, it really did raise awareness that, like, wow, this really affects a lot of people who we know and love. So are you from Houston?
I am from El Paso, Texas.
Mm-hmm. How'd you get here?
Born and raised. My husband had a job with Compact. So that's what brought us here.
And when did you get here?
We got here in 1994, but we were in the suburbs.
Uh-huh.
So we didn't move into town until 2000.
And you like living in town?
I like living in town.
What part of town are you in?
In Montrose.
Ah, me too. So did you raise a family here?
Well, they were getting up there. My daughter was in high school already.
Oh, okay.
So sort of raised them here, but they were really getting ready to get to leave.
So what got you interested in this area?
Well, I am a lesbian. I'm a late coming lesbian. And I wanted to find support for my husband.
Uh-huh.
So I took him to PFLAG. And once I was there, the people were very nice. And they said, you should stay too. It's for everybody. So I stuck around and I observed.
Well, that is very interesting.
And, you know, as we look at October 11th coming up, tell people the significance of October 11th.
Well, October 11th is National Coming Out Day. And it's to say, if everybody would come out and everybody be visible and everybody speak up, then we could avoid a lot of problems.
Yeah, because we would realize how many people we know and love who are in these communities.
Exactly.
Yeah. And is it a date that people actually use for coming out?
It is a date that people use for coming out.
Are there statistics on that? Do you know anything about it?
I do not have statistics, but if you look online that day, there's a lot.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I don't know how I missed this. I don't know how I didn't know this, but it seems important that there is such a day.
Mm-hmm.
It's validating in itself, whether one comes out on that day or not. The fact that it exists is very validating. And then you've been active in the community ever since.
I've been active in the community, yes. First of all, I was active with PFLAG, and then post-PFLAG, I was active trying to get a website that was educational. It was part of what became Homeless Gay Kids.
Oh.
At the time, I'm trying to think of what we called it, AFCI, which AFCI still has the website. At one point, we split, and Homeless Gay Kids took the residential, what we had hoped would be a residential place for kids who get kicked out of their houses because they're gay or lesbian.
This has been a cause of Venice Parker's, isn't that right?
Yes, although she wasn't on our board or anything, but we started with a physical wanting to do services. And as I say, when we split up, then we started trying to do just educational. We used to have classes for leisure learning, and then we just went to the website. And now I feel like there's a lot of information out on the web, and people can find information. So I don't think that we're as neat. And for a while there, we also went to counselors' conventions to talk to them about LGBTQ kids and the problems that exist in the house,
mm-hmm.
how to help them in school. And a lot of the counselors would tell us, well, we know those things, but we cannot address that with the children because the parents come back and accuse us of grooming their children or trying to change mm-hmm. their children. So there's a real problem there.
And that is a real problem there. And then if you mix in, like, we tend to not get political on the show. Our show's all about feeling good, but certainly with books and who's going to be reading books mm-hmm. and making decisions about what books can be in libraries for young people and such is getting a little bit tricky.
And we're blessed to have you on the show today because we are hoping to kick off awareness for LGBTQ plus History Month. People need to realize this month does exist and it's around. We typically associate the month of June with Pride Month and the historical significance of We Have History, for example. Tell listeners a little bit about the Banner Project more in detail and kind of maybe who's featured on the banner, how they're set up, different categories, and that great stuff.
When we started the banners, I had all these wild ideas. I didn't know what I really wanted. I'd seen an exhibit about New York activists and these regular people who had done things to change situations. And so I just came back very excited and wanted to do something. And I was told, go read this book, go visit museums. And everybody sort of, yeah, we love the idea, but who's going to do it? And I gathered like almost 600 pieces of information. But Joanna Collier from the library had started a timeline of LGBT history. So that part was there, and I was just adding to it. But it became overwhelming, and Brian Riedel was extremely helpful, got a group together, and we sat down and we said, what's important? What are the things that we can cover? And I thought we'd do 18 topics, but then we changed and decided to do just individual banners with an individual event or person. We had room for 27. We had been given 3 windows at the Hilton. So we picked 27 topics. This was December 25th. The conference was beginning February 1st. We were really tight schedule. So we try to pick a diverse group of people, a long time range of people. And
how far back does it start?
1930s.
That's significant too, folks. If you go to jddoylearchives.org, then you'll be able to notice that there's history on there that goes back to the 1930s in Houston. So you look and people think, well, I didn't know there was gay people back in the 30s because it's not discussed, right? It's not talked about. But with the documentation, the history of it, you can actually see there was a thriving community in Houston. It was obviously quiet and closeted because of the nature of people's personal safety in that particular time period, and even up until, well, as Heidi mentioned a second ago, people's personal safety is being challenged now.
Sure.
So you have those issues that exist at the time period. So it makes uncovering this particular history even more important, which is why I'm such a strong advocate for the Banner Project, but also for J.D. Doyle's archives, because people need to help us with this information, and it's out there. You might find an old box of photos or of newspaper clippings, or even better, love letters in the mm-hmm. attic from your great-grandfather or grandfather.
Can I just make a comment about that?
I'd love for Heidi to jump in about this, yeah.
Well, not necessarily specifically what you're talking about, but as a credentialed fine art appraiser, I regularly make house calls, not just in Houston, but generally in the area. And sometimes it has happened that someone has passed. It's not unusual for me to walk in the door and say, I'm so sorry for your loss. I do work with estates regularly. And sometimes people will find out after their loved one died that they were gay, and they found out after they died, which is super sad to me, and have thrown things away just sort of out of shame, really. Mm. And I have a client who came in with some photography for me to appraise for him, and he had some really exceptional photography. One photograph alone I appraised for more than $100,000, but it was a collection that is gay-focused, and he's older. He's in his upper 80s, and he lives in a small town. And I said, who knows about this? And he said, nobody. Nobody knows I'm gay. Nobody in my family is aware of this. And I said, you need to let someone know, and if you don't feel comfortable letting them know, leave a note, because this inheriting this could change someone's life. It was a significant financial asset. And I went to a client call for someone who I think was very well known in Galveston in his own community, but not to his own family. And they told me before I got there that they had just thrown out all this stuff. And I said, what kind of stuff?
Wow.
And when they told me, I felt really bad. And I felt really bad for the person who was their relative who never was able to feel comfortable telling them. But it is something that people do care about this. People should honor this. And I'm so glad that U of H has the archive, but it's real important if you have any of this material, at least leave a note about what it is.
I want to add something to that, because even people who know better, I called up some ex-PFLAG parents once and I said, we're doing this anniversary party. Do you have memorabilia? Do you have photos that we can use? And he said, just last week, we were looking at everything and thinking, who would want this? And we threw them away.
Oh.
And I thought, oh my gosh.
It's always, oh, who would want this? If I had a dollar for every time in the archives world.
Mm-hmm. And is that right?
Oh, it's always, oh, I didn't think anybody want this. And I'm like, no. You know, we get accused of being hoarders or saving stuff, but it's better to save it and then decide what we're going to do with it, especially now with the digital world. There's
yes.
nothing wrong with saving it and scanning it. And even in some cases, too, all these collections, MD Anderson, Rice University's over at the Woodson Library, all these things, the HMRC, HHRC specifically, over at the Jewel Addison Library, we will take historical images and just scan them in and give them back to you if necessary. It's about having a record, a digital record of it, so you don't have to part with some of these things, because if you have something valuable and special, we just ask that you share it with all of Houston because we can learn from it. A friend of the show, a friend of Heidi's as well, Randy Tibbetts, is mm-hmm. active with really LGBTQ plus Texas artists.
He gives wonderful talks about the LGBT community.
In the 30s and 40s.
Yeah, the art community. And so many of our greatest artists were members of that community, although it wasn't publicly known outside of that mm-hmm. community at the time. But all kinds of people are interested in hearing that talk. And it's some of our most important art from Houston.
Randy helped us with that. Oh. That's why we got the 1930 banner from him.
Oh, well, wow. And for anyone who thinks like no one would be interested in this, I would say, look at the AIDS quilt. What a monumental, astounding achievement, how huge that mm-hmm. thing is. If you haven't seen it, I encourage you to Google it when you're not driving.
And the impact.
The AIDS quilt Instagram is one of my very favorites. And it's just the most beautiful look at people who matter to other people. And I feel bad for anyone who experienced shame, or certainly the trans community now, with a leading cause of death being murder, mm-hmm. is just, I think that now that we have all this awareness, we'll eventually get past it. But it is a fragile community. So you moved to Montrose. And do you have your favorite spots in Montrose? Where are you usually hanging out?
I'm older. I usually hang out at home.
You hang out at home. Well, I have a lot of breakfast meetings because I don't take lunch because my gallery opens at 11 and it doesn't make sense to open at 11 and then go out to lunch. So I have dinner meetings, but mostly my business meetings are breakfast meetings. One of my favorite spots is Empire Cafe, which I learned was a men's bathhouse.
Yes, it was.
Yes. Ray Hill told me an interesting story about that.
Well, tell it. First off, and those KPFT loyal listeners know the name Ray Hill. Members of the LGBTQ plus community also have so much of their current freedoms because of Ray Hill and his work in regards to awareness and activism here too. But let listeners know, who was Ray Hill, and then tell your story. But
a supreme activist. I have four banners that are related to Ray Hill.
And that's how special he is, by the way.
And then he told me, well, I don't have my own banner. And I said, well, you're on four. You're on four. But the story that Ray Hill told me about Empire Cafe is they had an attic and men would go up there to entertain themselves. And one time it was raided and the police came, but police didn't know that people were up in the attic. So the people in the attic stayed there. And I think they were there 2 or 3 hours in burning heat.
Oh.
They could not come down.
Oh. Well,
they probably had light clothing on, so I guess they weren't too hot. But
Ray Hill's went there and did a radio show from the...
From the bathhouse?
Outside. You know, he went into this show, letting people know what was happening.
Wow. Did not know that.
Another thing that Ray Hill impacted for the banners is that, very unlike Ray Hill, he was talking to me once and he told me that Fred Pies was the person who made things happen for him. He said he'd have an idea to do something, and Fred was the one that carried it out. He wanted a school bus, he got a school bus. He wanted information from someplace or to plan a trip, Fred would do it. Fred would take him to Austin. And based on that, I knew that if Ray Hill was saying that, Fred was a very important person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Well, and besides Fred, what other individuals are listed on the banner project? I mean, you've got judges, for example.
Yes, we've got Phyllis Fry.
Talk about her significance.
Her significance, she's the first trans judge.
In the nation?
In the nation.
At the municipal level, that's a big deal.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And all her work, and she's written a book also.
Yeah, it came out a couple months ago, but that's a good example of just having, maybe actually almost a year and a half ago or so. It's been a while. But it's just about, you know, just telling her story, which is a unique and special one as well, and it just gives hope to a community.
It just shows how persistent she was. Another thing that I do is I try to record some oral histories. So I've taped Phyllis Fry a couple of times, taped Deb Murphy.
And where are these available at?
Oh, they're on JD's site, of course.
Oh, perfect. Then you see,
on
folks.
On videos, right.
So you can go there to jddoylearchives.org, and you can get information there about these oral histories.
Other people,
as well.
Yeah.
And are you a music person, too?
Not really. I love music, but... No.
Well, I know JD's really got the music archive.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Fourth floor of his house has nothing but music library up there. So
that's
pretty significant there. You can go there and hear anything all over, but that's his passion. But I love that your passion is also equal to history when it comes to the community's history as well. Are there any ideas to go forward with additional banners? I mean, I know that you've got a pretty large number of banners, 55 plus.
Actually, we have 49, not including the intro and the acknowledgments. Mm-hmm. We're doing one more this year. That'll make it 50. And I'm sorry to say, say that we will stop it there because they are big, they're heavy, and they're a lot of work.
And talk about the maintenance of the banners, where are they stored and kept at, and then also remind listeners that you will have a nonprofit set up to be able to help or fund people can actually contribute through maybe J.D. Dole's project as well,
right.
The idea of contributing to help keeping the banners going and maybe future possibly adding additional banners, revising them, things like that, but it does take money. Talk about where you store them and how that's kept up.
So after U of H took them the first year, they graciously accepted to keep them there for me because
wow.
They no longer fit in my house.
Yeah.
So U of H is keeping them for me, but I have to go get them every time they're going to be used. And after they get used, I clean them, I examine them, and I store them. It's a lot of work. It takes probably 14 hours of work just going through all the banners. That's why, once again, having more than 50 would be too much. One more thing I want to mention about the project. Well, there's probably more than one thing. First of all, is that it really energized us to learn so much of the Houston history. Even J.D. was surprised at how much history is in Houston and how many firsts there were here in Houston. Like, Omega House is the first hospice in the United States.
Wow.
It's got certificate number 0001.
Wow.
And the other thing is that we learn from history. And like in 1985, when the voters overturned the gay rights ordinance, well, if you read that history and you read how it happened, it began with demonizing LGBT people. And we're seeing something similar to where the message keeps going out till people become afraid and try to distance themselves. So along with learning a lot about Houston history, the thing that was also surprising is to realize my own internalized homophobia. And I think we all have a degree of that based on what we've been hearing all our lives. I had never heard anything positive about gay people. And when it came time to do Brian Bradley, that was my place where I had to really stop and think and analyze and intellectualize what was happening. I had always seen, they're bad people, act up, they misbehave, they create problems, and they're not willing to have a dialogue. And so my judgment was, well, why didn't he have a dialogue? Once I was reading his story, it's like he had nothing to lose. He had lost his partner. He was HIV positive. He lost his job over the illness. And he was out there alone in life fighting for rights and fighting for healing for people. And all his friends said that he was the most wonderful, kind, generous, gentle soul. But you never would know that from the news. Anyway, you can find all of these things on HoustonWeHaveHistory.org. And if anybody wants to contact us, we have links there to contact us.
Oh, wow. This has been great. Thank you so much, Sarah, for sharing the project that you've worked on with love and attention and really kind of the gift that you've given all of Houston. So folks, go out there, go to WeHaveHistory.org and learn about the legacy of the Banner Project and the information and history that's there as we focus and all celebrate the month of October and the connection to the LGBTQ+ community. So thank you again for joining us on the Houston Hour. We're going to hand it over. Take care, Houston.
Thank you.